They teach us that birth needs medical intervention, that labor hurts, so we wonder why we should go through pain to welcome our baby into the world. Then we hear about obstetric violence that leaves us with a bitter taste, birth experience, and a feeling that there must be more to birth. I hear all of this, and I believe with all my heart that another reality is possible. That as women, we all have the keys inside us to birth our babies and their placentas. My name is Mags, and with my husband Keith, we are the Quantic Family. Every week, I get the privilege to sit with passionate people that speak to us authentically about birth and the quantic energy around pregnancy, birth, and beyond. My intention is to diffuse their messages to allow you to make enlightened choices that truly resonate with who you are. I see this podcast as a caring and intimate place where you can allow yourself to be who you truly are and reconnect to the power within you to accompany your baby on his journey. I also wish for your partner to find his place in the middle of this transformational process so that together you become the strong foundation of your family. I truly believe that along we go faster, but together we go further. So join us. Together, let's come out of the belief system created by our society and reconnect with our intuition. Each birth is unique. May yours be truly authentic. What a pleasure to be back with you in this new year 2021. My name is Mags, and I hope you are ready to launch this new year's journey towards your true and authentic self. I've prepared for you fantastic episodes with passionate people, and surprises are to come along. I am still passionate about birth and the quantic around pregnancy, birth, and beyond. Before I leave you with today's episodes, I am so happy to tell you that Keith and I, the Quantic Family, we've prepared for you a series of three free videos to involve your partner in making childbirth an enhanced, positive, and transformational experience. You will find the link to this series underneath the podcast episode. And you can also find it in our link tree on Instagram and Facebook. Each birth is unique. Make yours be truly authentic. Hello, 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 and welcome to the podcast Authentic Birth. My name is Mags. You can also find me on the social network as Authentic Mum. And today I'm honored to have with me Dr. Stanton Ohm. Hello.
Hi, nice to see you again.
So you are a graduate from the United States Military Academy at Western Point.
Yes, I am.
You had the chance to do an internship at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, where you got the opportunity to witness all type of surgeries, like brain surgery, open heart surgery. And at that point, you decided not to pursue medical school. After your military career, you arrived in San Diego, where you had an amazing opportunity with your brother, Steve, and where you became his chiropractic patient. And that changed your life. It brought to the past PTSD,
severe digestive problems, chronic pain, and stress. This self-healing that you did took you to this mission of chiropractic. And you graduated as a chiropractor and started a clinic in San Diego where you're serving the community. You're specialized in the family from preconception through birth, infants, childhood, and beyond. You have a team in this clinic. And since April, you've released a podcast called Future Generation, where you approach subjects and you are focusing on natural living, optimal self-healing, and health freedom. Dr. Stan, as I'm going to choose to call you.
Yes, of
thank
course.
You for being here.
I'm very honored to be here.
I would love to start the interview talking about what made your life a realization of what it was to have a committed purpose in your life when you got married and when your daughter was born.
That I guess I've been exemplified that my whole life. You know, I guess, you know, I never would have thought that that was going to be the outcome of getting married and witnessing the birth of my daughter. But, and then it's pretty amazing. And you're in the birthing community. So, you know, that you bring your births into your own birthing process into the birthing process of your own children, both men and women do, right? And then at the same time, you don't realize that you essentially, it's almost like your whole life reconciles in that moment if you're open to that process. And so what I witnessed was that it's almost like my entire past started to make sense, because I started to realize all of the levels of commitment that my parents have made for me and their parents made for them. And in the culture of just being a committed family member, being committed to your children and the future generations of your family. But in that moment for me, I think with the marriage to my wife, it was almost as if, because a lot of times you hear, it's like, oh, we're engaged and it's, you know, it's the same, you know, we got married and it's the same. And for us, it was very tangibly different, because I believe that maybe our day-to-day communication changed, the way and the reason and the why behind our communication changed, maybe even the things that we did and why we did the things that we did, especially me, just thinking about, you know, even the families in my practice becoming a community around us versus me serving a community. And then all of a sudden when the baby was born, everything became a timeline where it was either before my daughter was born or after my daughter was born. So my daughter was born last August 13, 2019. And so in my mind, every baby that was born before my daughter in my practice, I've watched their development this whole time. And then every baby after my daughter is making me realize that I can witness the development of those children afterwards. And the beautiful thing about birth is that once there is conception, and I've said this to two many women at this time, you know, who are coming to me for pregnancy chiropractic care, it's like the female body is so miraculous that you can take two half cells and roughly 280 days later, a 26 billion cell vital being emerges that has the full ability to sleep, poop, eat optimally. And that process, like once it starts, there's no pause button, you know, you can't stop it and you can't reverse it. And you don't consciously control it after I've talked to, you know, I will never do this in my body, you know, so I'm humbled to the fact that you have done this and my wife has done this and many women in my practice have done this. But once you witness it for yourself in your own family, as a part of your own lineage and heritage, it's almost like your life becomes so much more purposeful, where front and center in front of you, actually, I hear my daughter, she's already waking up, which is a little bit early for her, you know, but in those moments, your heart, you know, shudders a little bit, because she's always and forever a part of who I am, but also a part of this lineage and heritage and legacy that, you know, I believe that these babies choose, you know, these babies choose their parents, and the spirit, you know, is a, you know, the infinite intelligence that's all around us. And so once you kind of reconcile all of that, then you have to kind of sit back and realize that, or I did for myself, that if I didn't live with integrity, and if I didn't live in alignment with who I am, you know, and my truths at the deepest part of me, and then if I didn't build a community around my family so that we could always have people, because we're so separated today, especially now in our current community with, you know, all the isolation and everything, is that, you know, largely that's what we're doing in San Diego. California, of all the states, is more restricted and more locked down. They just talked about a whole nother, we call it shelter in place here, where people aren't allowed to go outside anymore. And, you know, there's no real numbers to justify that. However, what we've done in our practice is that we've never stopped. We've always been considered essential workers and things like that, but we've never stopped creating a community around, selfishly around my family, so that we'd always have people to serve, and we'd always have people around us to, you know, just be a part of the journey of growing our family. And so I think for me, just to kind of button that conversation up, it's like, I never knew that that's what my parents were doing for me. I didn't know that that's why my mom's parents emigrated from Taiwan, you know, took a whole year to travel by boat through Japan, through Brazil, through the Panama Canal to California. I didn't know that's why my dad's family fled from, you know, communist China and oppression and war to bring 5 men out of that family to the United States to fight in World War II for the United States, and then grow our family in Southern California. I didn't know that's why they did that. You know, it didn't make the depth of sense that I believe my daughter and my wife have created for me at this stage. And I know it's, you know, vice versa, you know, for my wife as well. You know, the idea or the fact that we were married and we're bonded, you know, in this union for life and for eternity, it's cliche, but it's the most beautiful thing in the world. You know, it really is. And so.
And with you explaining it, yeah, you explain it really well, and we can feel that you really mean what you're saying.
It's so funny, because a lot of people, when you do my intro, right, they're like, oh, you're in the United States Military Academy, and you know, like most people would never talk to me and meet me right away and say, oh, you are definitely in the military. You know, it's just not, it doesn't kind of make sense for a lot of people until you meet me and you hear me communicate about that. But most people know for a fact, like immediately, that I'm a family oriented person, that I'm a very, I'm very focused on, you know, my wife and my daughter, but also like every aspect of my family. And so I do love talking about it.
So you mentioned how becoming a father allowed you to link with the understanding of what your parents did for you.
Yeah.
How did you manage to find your space next to your woman when she was pregnant?
You mean like my physical space, or you mean like my more of like the mental, emotional, spiritual space? That's a really interesting conversation, and that's a really interesting question, because a lot of times there are challenges for men, right? There are challenges for men in the whole pregnancy process. And I found myself, I've been in the birthing community for, I think now, almost 11 years in San Diego, and I've helped parents navigate this, and men often have a really difficult time postpartum as well. And I would say I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky to have had 10 years, 11 years of caring for families and seen and witnessed this process for a long time, in that I've helped men do this already. And it became very natural for me to find my own space, in that I consider myself somebody who's very, how do you say this? I focus on other people. I'm very much a giving type person. And so it was very natural for me to be like, hey, you know, you're growing a whole human, our human. Let's whatever we need to do to make sure that she's cared for and you're cared for in this whole process. But I would say it's being able to witness families and guide them through the process that's really helped me find where my place would be as well. But I would say aside from that, for all of the listeners and for the men who will be listening, we all have it inside of us. Like if women, and maybe it's cliche to say, well, all women are made of eons of time of women delivering babies, and so that's within you. Well, then it's within partners to have and bear witness to and hold a space and create a space for women to thrive throughout the process, versus what's common today is birth is a condition to be managed by a medical provider, and a lot of fear and a lot of testing and a lot of measurements, that the best outcome of the measurements is, hey, things aren't bad, so hey, you know, you don't have to fear as much anymore. It could be completely reversed, where if that union and that community around that union just honored that process that the Dalai Lama calls the birthing process and gestation, the ultimate form of love and compassion in all of nature and biology today. And so if we actually just took a step back and honored that and just recognized that this is life forming, in the most tangible and most raw way, that I think we all have it within us to find our space in that process. We all have the ability to take a step back and realize that, hey, this 9-month process plus 40 days plus whatever postpartum, which postpartum is actually forever, is a time where I can actually just stand in service, take my hands off of all the things that are my highest priorities, and gift to that other person. Now, with that said, you don't give to a point where you can't serve and give. You know, you have to at some point find your way to fill yourself up through that process too, which we can, you know, talk about in a different conversation, in a different question. But at the same time, I would say that we all have it within us. And so for me to say I found it, I would say I didn't look for it on the outside of me. I kind of just uncovered it inside of me, realizing that if birth has been happening for eons of time and women are made to make babies and men and other partners are allowed to be in that community and space, then we all have it within us to hold a space and create a space for our families to grow. I apologize.
Your cat wants to come out of the room, I think.
I apologize. I might do that real quick if that's okay.
No problem.
It's so funny.
It's okay.
The cats are actually not allowed in the room, and so I don't know how they make it. I'm so sorry about that, actually.
Okay, so you were I love how you explain the dad, the partner that's got this holding space. He holds the space.
Yeah,
and you explained that you it helped you to support other families in this process of helping the dad finding his place. So more like practical, how did you support dads to find this space?
You know, it depends, right? It depends on if the dad actually makes it into my practice during this time, right? So I would say on average, 100% of the time, the women come first to my practice and seek out the care. It's on average, maybe, and this is me estimating, maybe 50 to 60% of the time, the partners will come into, the dads will come into. And in that time, it could be very direct. You know, it could be very direct in that, hey, this is what she's going through, and this is what, and this time period, and this is all, you know, whether it's how they're navigating at a birth center or how they're navigating a home birth and what questions, you know, they always ask me, you know, feedback about informed consent. And so it's often just providing information, right? But if I don't get to meet the father or the partner to be, then what happens is it's directed through the birthing mom, right? And so sometimes it's as simple as like, okay, you've reached third trimester. And so I'm going to write you a note that says, your husband will give you a foot massage and a shoulder massage 3 nights a week. And it's kind of a joke, but then they actually take it home and they actually say, hey, this is what my chiropractor said. And invariably it happens, you know? And so, and then when it's time to approach, you know, we're approaching the due date, and I let them know it's an estimation and it's plus or minus, you know, let them know, remind them that it's not just a hardwired eviction notice for the baby, but it's oftentimes, hey, this is a moment in time where you can really find ways to increase and enhance oxytocin rich things, you know, whether it's, you know, sex and nipple stimulation, or it's, you know, certain foods and certain supplements, or it's, and I'll write this down too, it's like, you should go shopping, or you should go, you know, like it just becomes very direct, like communication. And I let them know, it's not like your husband will, and it's like your doctor says, it's more of just this kind of very informal, sometimes comedic way of bringing light to these time periods, because birth can be scary. It could be heavy. It could be emotional. And I tend to bring a lightness to it because I'm a man, but also because it can be that way. And that's the space that I like to create in my practice, where some people are just in it all the time. What's the spiritual? What's the energy? What's the emotion? And I tend to not be more surface level. I can go there if we need to go there, but sometimes it's already there. And most of my patients are in, sometimes they're in a very amazing midwifery practice that is already kind of diving deep into a lot of those kind of existential conversations, that I tend to just bring a lightness to it about where the phase of birth is. But if it's with the guys, then it's oftentimes, it's very much like, hey, actually your fantasy football league doesn't matter right now, or you don't need to worry about, you know, these types of things, because she's kind of growing your kid. Like it's your baby, like your baby is going to be born, and you don't return the baby. The baby can't go back in the womb, and your baby doesn't get smaller. Your baby doesn't get slower. Your baby doesn't get less intelligent. So you have to mentally prepare guys more than women sometimes for the permanence, right? The permanence of becoming a father or becoming, you know, a parent, right? And it's not to say that they don't, and I don't want to generalize, because I would say classically in the last, you know, of the last 10 years, there's been a gradual change in the consciousness of fathering that I've loved to witness, because before it used to be more of a maybe stereotypical men and dads and machismo, versus now I feel like many of the men that are coming in, they are more enrolled and engaged in their wife's care than sometimes their wives are in the beginning. And it's very interesting to watch that transformation over time. And I would like to say that it's probably because the birthing community has been so well, it's been done so such a good job of communicating and helping a lot of these men transform. And so
I think what, sorry?
No, I hope that helps. Yeah,
it's amazing. I think it's how men can find themselves significant in the process.
Yeah. And so postpartum, right? Like I had a young family have their second baby. First baby, the dad had just a mental breakdown. And so he wasn't even at the birth. He didn't even attend the birth. And one of our other patients was part of that first birth. And now these two friends are part of our practice. And second pregnancy, you know, the goal was, you know, we just want the dad there. You know, I was like, well, that's great. That's wonderful. That's going to happen. But what is he going to do when he's there? And we could obviously talk about all those different aspects. But when it came to postpartum, that void, right? Sometimes all the focus and energy goes towards the mother and the baby. And this dad found himself useless. You know, some words like, he's like, I feel useless. I feel like I can't do anything. I can't nurse the baby and the baby doesn't want me. I'm like, okay. So then the question is what can you do? And I just told him a whole story about what we did, you know, because I didn't feel that way, but I could see that that was happening. And so I was just like, here's what I did. I don't know if this is going to work for you, but this is a funny thing that we didn't know that I was going to do. We didn't plan on it, but we were gifted somehow, I don't know why, many loaves of fresh baked bread. Like people will bring you bread and people bring you food and you can set up where, and dads can do this, right? I don't know if they have this in France, but we have a website process called a meal train where you can set up, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, all the different meals. And I was like, you could do something like that and be in charge of setting that up. Or I would actually delegate that to somebody outside of your family. But I was like, for me and my family, what my wife will talk about probably until the end of our lives is she will talk about the gourmet sandwiches that I made for her postpartum, where we had been gifted so many loaves of bread that I started to freeze them because we had too many. I didn't want them to go bad. But then every day, almost, she was like, can I have a grilled cheese with bacon today? Can I have a tuna? And it became this thing where I just started to make gourmet sandwiches. And I was like, I don't know if that's what it is for you, but that's something that we did. It was spontaneous. And for me, it became a special thing that I did postpartum. And it sounds silly that I was a sandwich maker, but I will say that to this day, my wife will say the best 3 weeks of my life were the time that you were off from work and you made me sandwiches, you know? And it was like, in the meantime, we're losing sleep, nursing challenges, tongue tie revisions, all the different things that do happen in postpartum, but something that I could contribute was something that I didn't necessarily expect, nothing we necessarily planned, but it gave me a sense of meaningful contribution. And it gave my wife like this memory in her mind that now if we get a loaf of bread, she's like, oh, like I can have a sandwich. I'm like, yes, like we can do that, you know? And it becomes this reminder of this moment that instead of it being about me and this void postpartum and how I feel like I don't have worth or I don't have meaning or I'm not contributing, it became a spontaneous thing where I was just like, where can I contribute and what can I do? And then all of a sudden that creativity just came up and it became something that very unintentionally has painted, you know, our whole postpartum experience, where ever since that time, anytime we have a sandwich, even if I make it or I don't make it, it becomes a trigger for her to remember that in the midst of all the chaos and craziness of postpartum, immediate postpartum, there was a mainstay of gourmet sandwiches. You know, so
I love it. No, I love it. I love it. And it's how just such a simple thing made your couple strong and together and united.
Yes. And when I expressed this to this this mother who was going through postpartum, she was just like, you know what? He loves doing things like that. And I was like, okay, so that's the thing, is we often get caught up. I would say when I've seen men go through this process, what we get caught up in is this, it's almost like an ego thing. And it's not to say all men have egos. It's more just to say that we all have egos and we all kind of battle for our attention and we battle for our priorities. And it's a moment in time where I believe in all of nature, if we went back thousands of years and we witnessed what birth was like, we would witness that around a birthing patient and a birthing mother is a community of people willing to take their hands off of their highest priorities and gift to the next generation of their family legacy. I think that's something that is highly just, it's, how do I say this? Without going down too many, it's frustrating today to be, and I'm sure you see this in France too, and I hear Europe is much different than the United States. Everything is becoming more technocratic, mechanistic around birth in the United States, I think, at this stage, even in a more progressive, holistic county like San Diego, California, we're still at 30-35% C-section rate. And we know that they go up on Friday afternoons. And we know that, you know, it's very much a process today. And societally, when we know it's going in that direction, and it has been for many, many decades, that it's important for us to remember that it is inside us, inside women to birth, and it's inside all of us to honor birth. And it's actually a very innate feeling that I believe, one, feeds into that gel that will bind families, but also if you extrapolate that further into communities, that's how you grow a community that bonds together too. So.
Wow. Beautiful.
It's fun. It's fun every day, right? Every day you do this work. And that's the thing, is if you do this type of work, you don't ever feel like it's draining. You feel tired and you feel levels of exhaustion that you don't ever expect. And you tap into sources of energy. I mean, I'm sure for you, when you are on call, you know, and you're at a birth behind, you know, back to back to back to back births, you draw from a source of energy that I believe is not just within you. I believe it's a part of all of us as humans. You know, I think it's a part of all of life. And I think in this setting, that then also feeds into my conversation. You know, like I'll often just say to men, I'll say something like, yeah, isn't it? It must be really hard. You know, like postpartum for men is like, it's like the man flu. You know, it's like the man flu. You have this phrase in France, like the man flu.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
4,000 times worse suffering than pregnancy and birth. And so we should really pay close attention to where you are postpartum, because I mean, what you're going through is far worse than what your wife just did, you know? And I'll often kind of joke with them and they'll like, it'll re-trigger in their mind that they're being a little bit selfish. You know, they're being a little bit self-focused. I don't want to throw it in their face because I want to honor everybody's perspective and their process, but I don't avoid that conversation or that confrontation, because I often find that we tend to be still, unfortunately, the only practice that might have that conversation with them. They're not going to get it at their conventional OB. They may not actually get that because maybe men won't go to the midwife, or they may not be as receptive at a midwifery appointment or at a birthing class, you know, hypnobirthing, birthing from within, a lot of the different practice. Like, I think those settings are the most transformative, in my opinion, because it's immersion training for both husband and wife, you know, mom and dad. But it tends to be fun to come from a guy's perspective, where just like, yeah, you know, you must be really having a hard time. This is a terrible time for the male experience postpartum. It's like neglect, loneliness, you know, and then it goes into
little sex.
What's that?
Little sex.
Well, yes. Yeah. And then I'll go into like those types of things. And it's like, yeah, you know, I can't wait for that 6-week appointment, because then, you know, she gets cleared for exercise and you can have sex again. Wonderful. You know, it's like, no, actually that 6-week appointment isn't just for that, just so you know. And that process and that timeline can last a lot longer. And what you have to realize is that some women perceive their birthing experience, even sometimes in the most peaceful settings, as severely traumatic emotionally, physically. And so therefore, you have to take a step back even further and realize that all those things that you had before, whether it was regular sexual intercourse and all these other things, they're going to look different. And you have to recognize that the birthing process, and I'll reframe it and I'll say, actually, the birthing process is the most in all of nature, maybe in all the species, because of how modern humans are today. It is the most intense, there, you know, definitely traumatic, not always in the worst ways, you know, but sometimes in the worst ways.
Transformational.
And you have to be recognizing of that with your partner. And if you don't, you may miss how to help them heal, and you may miss how to create longevity in that healing, sustainability in that healing. Because a lot of times I will hear in my more conventional friendships that don't recognize the, in my opinion, the sanctity of birth, that, you know, yeah, my wife says, you know, it's 6 months and she still says, you know, sex hurts. I don't know if I buy it. You know, I think she's just avoiding, she doesn't want me. Or I'm like, no. You have to recognize that there is a published clinical entity of, if it's a conventional birth, conventional medical delivery, not empowering for mom at all, no informed consent, no, you know, shared decision-making, that it could be emotionally, spiritually, and physically traumatic to the point where they call it obstetric violence. And when you have that potential, you have to recognize that that's not just women claiming that something happened to them. That's a true raw birthing outcome that I would say, you know, my wife, our daughter was born right upstairs, that there was levels of trauma in a home, peaceful home birth that I didn't witness, even though I was there. I didn't feel it and I didn't witness it in any of the people, but in my wife's experience, she felt that. And it was for me, I had to take a step back, and it was really interesting because she was more of like, I wish we were having sex more. I wish we were, you know, it was more of like a guilt on her end. And I was like, hey, like, you have to realize that this is what we do. This is what we've done in our practice, in our community for a long time. It's about our connection. It's about our intimacy, but it's not about the act of sex in this moment, especially if that's going to trigger you into some sort of experience that was traumatic or somehow, which we haven't figured out, you know, at that moment, we haven't figured out where or why or how deep it is. How about we investigate that before we go down this route of, and then we'll test things along the way to make sure things are healing. And I would say that we're 16 months postpartum now. And I say we, because I believe we all are part of this process in postpartum. I know I didn't have the baby, but I would say we are at a stage where there's a level. It's like, I think about those books, like the first 40 days or the fourth trimester and postpartum. And when am I going to get back to where I was? Where's the unit going to get back to where we were? And I was like, and I just have sat back very viscerally and being like, we're changed forever. We are changed as a family unit forever. My wife is recognizing that as well, because I believe it's a much more visceral experience for the birthing mother to experience what that postpartum is like. But I would say that for us, we're still in the journey. We're still in the journey of healing, you know, whereas sex isn't as triggering and sex isn't as painful or traumatic or raw or tender, but it's also just, it's a different life now. And it's a really interesting transformation because I hear my daughter, even the slightest little whimper, and it triggers in you this like, oh, I need to go to her. You know, and my wife is obviously, you know, with this interview, I'm on the early morning shift, but it's very interesting to see how priorities can change so immediately. And when they change so immediately, instead of fighting it with our ego, we have to recognize that this has been the process of life on the planet for times longer than we will ever record. And because of that, we should just honor that process. And if we do, the fruitful outcome is more than anything we could ever create in our own, you know, material world, in our own material existence.
Wow.
Sorry.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. It's so funny because, you know, I'm a podcaster too, Mags, and you know that, and I can't wait to interview you. But when you're on the receiving end of an interview, after you've done a lot of interviews, it's so interesting how I interview differently now that when people interview me, the experience is different than now that I've interviewed so many people. I find that I'm a little bit more fluid and I'm a little bit more, I wouldn't say authentic, definitely less polished, meaning like it's not calculated. And so I don't know where all of this is coming from. It's coming from somewhere. So I appreciate you holding and creating the space for me to just, you know, express.
Wow. Thank you for your trust.
Of course. Of course. Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of ladies that hear this podcast will go, I want my man to do like he is doing.
it's kind of, how do I say this? People ask me all the time, like, why birth and why kids? You know, what led somebody who went to the, you know, arguably the greatest military academy and the leadership institution, how did I go into birth, you know? And I look back at my life and I didn't know this until maybe 2 or 3 years into practice, into actually, you know, being a chiropractor who is focusing on this work, that my grandmother's sister was their village midwife in Taiwan. And my grandmother was a doula, like she was an attendant, an assistant, you know, and she would be attending all the births. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. And in my household or in my extended family, there are, you know, several cousins and I'm the fourth oldest. And my cousin, who's 4 days older than me, she and I, our older brothers are a little bit older. So they were, you know, a little too cool for the rest of us, you know? And so the two of us basically took the rest of our cousins who were maybe 6 months, 1 year, 1.5 years, 2 years, like every 6 months, there's a cousin after us. And basically we were part of very firsthand raising them. And so in our practice, when our pregnant patients deliver babies, we always do our infant exam complimentary. And we do it because the exam that we do is very different than a midwifery exam. It's very different than checking Apgar scores and whether or not a baby needs to go to the NICU. It's very functional about the expression of that baby's intelligence, their wisdom within, and also what the traumas and the challenges of birth actually experience with the baby. But one thing that is invariable is that babies cry. You know, and babies are upset and they're frustrated and they're constipated and they're reflux and they're colicky and they're all the different things that happen postpartum. And a lot of my patients are like, how do you just let them scream? I'm like, well, I've had cousins screaming at me my whole childhood. So I think I just know how to be there for screaming babies. I just think I do. I don't know, you know, and it's such an interesting thing because I think that's where it started. I think it started from, you know, my grandmother. And I believe that's why in that side of our family, it's very tribal. It's very tribal. Like the way that my uncle holds my daughter is the same way that somehow innately I hold my daughter, you know, and it's very interesting how my mom will just throw her on her back, you know, as if, you know, she's just walking around, you know, village in Taiwan. And that's probably how she was held by her father or something like that. And it's such an interesting just experience every time that I get to be with my parents, is recognizing that I wish that our society was so tribal. I wish we were that gelled together. And I believe for me, and I want it for other people, because every time I get to experience, I get to witness like almost like a reconciliation of my entire past in my present moment, and maybe create a vision for the future for my daughter, you know, and that's something that I don't quite know exactly what that will look like. Obviously, I can't predict the future, but what I do know is that even in the midst of all the craziness and the hysteria and the lockdowns and all the things that are happening in our community, we will never compromise the community that we're growing around all of the children that we actually have in our practice at this stage. I would say that there's something interesting about our practice is that during this time where many small businesses are suffering, we're lucky because we have been called an essential health practice, that we've refused to let fear take over our practice. We've refused to let it separate and divide us. And we've refused to let it, in the United States, it's very much very mask, like you have to wear masks everywhere. And if you don't wear a mask in California, people, not police officers, not people of official, not government workers, public people will look at you with shame and, you know, coercion to get you to do what it is that they believe is safe and all those types of things. And I've made it a point from the very beginning in my practice that we will never have that energy in our practice. If you want to wear your mask, great. If you want to do this, fantastic. But you will always respect and honor all the other people around you for their own path. And it's interesting that that's actually worked throughout this entire time. And for me, I know that's not common in this time period, right? It's either you're 100% mask, or some people are just like, I'm never going to wear a mask. And it's like, for us, just like in birth, it's not about one choice or another choice. It's not about my agenda for my patient. It's about a shared, empowered decision-making process that is all based on informed consent that allows the birthing patient, the parents in my practice, to make the best choice, educated choice, hopefully, that they can for their families. And I believe that's also a very spiritual thing too, you know, to empower patients and to empower your parents through the choices that they have to make, rather than mandate and control and coerce them into those types of choices. So
I'm not sure if it's spiritual, but it sounds very true and practical for me.
Yeah, I think it's both. You know, I think it's both. I think we know, and this is another thing, right? This is something that I know for a fact that I have healed in my process of becoming a dad, is that my mother comes from a very stereotypical Asian perspective, you know, which is very different than America, right? America's like land of the free, you know, I can do whatever I want, you know. In Taiwan, it's very, for at least our culture, it's very direct, you know, do this, do that. And growing up Asian American, growing up Taiwanese and Chinese American in a blend of cultures, I pushed back from that a lot. But I didn't realize that that comes from eons of time, and it comes from a lineage and a heritage that has done so much for so long, that in a certain way that it comes out sterile, it comes out directive, it comes out harsh and aggressive and abrasive. But what I've noticed for me becoming a dad is that I witnessed that, and the thing that I've kind of reframed, and this is something that I love, that has been my experience at least, is that it's helped me reframe where my parents have come from, in that I've been able to see that my parents may not be, well, I'd say this, my dad is very different. My dad was born in LA. He's they came 20 years before my mom's family. And so they're very much more American. So my dad is very touchy-feely, very much more of a communicator, very much like empowering my choices, honoring my free will as an American, you know, like versus my mom is just like very linear, you know, do it this way. And one day they always babysit. So they babysat yesterday and we'll always have two new things in our kitchen. And sometimes we're like, what are you trying to change this in our kitchen? Don't change this in our kitchen, you know? But what I know is that my mother is the most reliable person in my life. And instead of love coming from a warm and a connected and maybe a conscious, like a viscerally conscious way of communicating, it comes through the food that she makes for us. And it comes from the food that she makes for us when she has a lot of resentment that she feels for us. You know, like it's like when she would actually potentially not care as much, she will, it from her heart, gift something that is so beautiful and intangible that I don't think I would have recognized that as viscerally until I became a dad. Because my daughter, she got up early and she's screaming and we could be frustrated in that moment is, why are you awake? I'm supposed to be sleeping. That's going to take away from the rest of my day. But in the end, am I not going to change her diaper? Am I not going to make breakfast for her? Am I not going to do those types of things? And I think it made me realize that it actually really healed my relationship with my parents. Like it, like the whole process, not just help me in my practice and help me in my life being a great dad postpartum, help my wife and I come together, you know, gourmet sandwiches. But it actually helped reconcile a lot of my past. And I noticed then that I've taken care of pregnant mothers for 10 years, that witnessing that process that I couldn't not see that that's exactly what my mom did for me. And wow, she did for our family three times, right? My brother is older than me, my sister's younger than me. And if that process is the guardian of life on the planet, and if it also is on the flip side of that, potentially the most traumatic, the most intense, the most transformative, the most existential process that a woman will go through, then can I have a deeper sense of compassion for even my mother's way of doing things? And I would say at this stage, I'm not perfect every day. You know, sometimes she triggers me. I'm like, you got me and I'm going to get you right back. But I will say that that has been one of the most healing processes for me too. Like we did a class, and this is one of our podcast episodes. I can't remember the episode number, but our doula, amazing, amazing, amazing people on the planet who are birth doulas, postpartum doulas. She does a course on preconception, spiritual connection, so that couples can get to a place where you become as a couple and mom becomes as a vessel for that next spiritual being in your lineage, more receptive, a healthier home, a more balanced healing space. And in that process, we did an exercise, and the exercise was a series of questions that we ask our parents about our birthing experience. And it was the most hilarious and warming and alarming, you know. It's like, it was this experience where it was just like my wife's experience in their family. They're so conversational. They're so descriptive. And so she got all these details. And my dad, he's like, I think I was at your birth. Maybe I was at Steps. I'm not sure. Maybe I was at your sister's. I know one of them, we just dropped off your mom and they said, go back to work and come back in a few hours. And, you know, it was a sign of what birth was like at the time. And I could have taken that as offensive You know, I could have taken that as, well, you weren't there for me. Or I could have just recognized that he was probably doing the best that he could during that time, given what the age and stage of society was. And it was an interesting like moment for us that I would say prepared us for what we are experiencing now. You know, is recognizing that prenatally, birth, and then postpartum is a process of the collective, not just an individual experience. And in realizing that, where I am today is recognizing that a lot of times I have a space for healing with even my parents' experience and what I've received from them, because somebody helped, our birthing professionals helped us create a space for that healing, you know? And so anyways, I thought I'd say that.
Amazing. Your story about reconciliating parts of you to make yourself a more present man, a more present chiropractor, a more present dad.
And maybe some of your listeners may be like, well, that's completely opposite of what our experience is, you know? And sometimes that happens, right? It's very common to have birth be traumatic, and it's common for this kind of cascade of events postpartum to be riddled with the challenges, whether it's breastfeeding challenges or sleep challenges, or it's colicky babies, or it's digestive problems, or it's tongue ties, or it's all these things that kind of paint that postpartum experience. But what I found is that it obligates us. Like, your podcast is so important. It's so important because it's hopefully bringing to light not just we need to empower birth, it's the process and the effect of empowering birth and those possibilities of healing. Like, we hear all the time, we bring our births into our birth, right? Like, you will bring your birthing experience into the birth of your children, whether it's the male or the female part, or it's, you know, who knows which parts, right? And because of that, we have to recognize that if the space, it depends on when that space is held. If the space is held way in the preconception phase, and there's a space created for healing and transformation and all these amazing, beautiful healing aspects, then that can cascade all the way forward. But if you're in that postpartum phase and you're in the thick of it right now, and if this is so far from where you are experiencing postpartum, and you might be 16 months postpartum and still experiencing a lot of this, then what I would say is finding a whether it's a birth doula, or if it's a chiropractor, or if it's somebody in your world that can help you create and hold that space for transformation and healing. I always tell my patients this, like, when should we start doing this? It's like, well, the sooner the better. And they're like, well, that's kind of obscure. I was like, well, I'm going to get even more obscure. It's never too late. And so what it means is that once it comes up, it's the universe saying that this is something that you need to do. But if you don't act on it, sometimes the universe screams a little bit at you to remind you that this is something that you are supposed to do. But it's never too late. The universe is always going to remind you that, hey, at any moment's notice, we can create a space and hold a space for healing and transformation that can happen now, right? And so in my practice, that's what we see, is we see families in the preconception phase, which is obviously, in my opinion, the sooner the better. But we have families that come in when kids are 3, 4, or 5 years old, and they're dealing with learning challenges, or they're dealing with delays and all these different things that they didn't know birth has a process and an influence on where kids develop later. And what we then do is we help them create that space for healing for them. And then all of a sudden they all heal together then. And then sometimes they're like, we thought we were done. We thought we were never going to have kids again. And then now we're realizing that maybe we could do it differently this time. We're like, maybe you can, you know, and if you did, we would help you provide all the resources to help you create that space as early as possible, whenever your body and whenever your family is ready for that. And it's an interesting process, you know, because people ask me all the time, how do you see, like in conventional medicine, you're an OB or you're a pediatrician, you know, you're not both. And, but midwifery care, they, you know, our midwife did postpartum care a year postpartum. And that was not just for mom, that was for baby, right? And I would say chiropractors who are trained like me, we have an invested interest in the whole landscape and timeline of life. And, you know, just 2 days ago, I did an interview with one of my patients who's 17 years old, and he asked me to do a school project on the history of healthcare from a chiropractic perspective. And I was like, oh, let's talk about this. I would love to talk about this because I believe the process of chiropractic and conventional healthcare is very similar to the process of birth, in that it's always become marginalized. Where, you know, birthing professionals, natural birthing professionals and advocates are, you know, they're not quite, you know, to the same status as conventional medical practices. And it's very interesting because he comes out of it and he says, maybe I want to be a chiropractor one day. And I was like, maybe. You know, maybe that's something that you would love to do. I didn't think that wasn't my agenda for you to go through this process. But what's amazing is that he's 18, right? He's 18 years old. And he's still in our practice, and his family, they've started basically since COVID, since the lockdown, his family, two parents, three siblings, all teenagers, you know, they're at a later stage of life in their family. And it's amazing for them to be around birth and to be around babies and to be around the process of everybody else, because they've noticed that being in our environment, they've found ways to heal a lot of their stuff too, which is amazing. And so for me, I look at the whole cascade of life, and I don't see myself as a pregnancy chiropractor or a pediatric chiropractor. I see myself actually, to go maybe even full circle back to maybe my decision not to be a medical doctor, is I just told this to my staff yesterday, as I said, I don't have any issues with the medical community in terms of how I feel I fit, in that they can do their thing. They're experts at their thing. Hopefully they're good people and they're smart and they're well-intended. But on my end, I don't think I would ever be able to, I would say this, no one would ever be able to debate me on the life that I doctor, right? I consider myself a doctor of life and a doctor of health and a doctor of vibrancy versus a doctor of medicine, a doctor of disease, a doctor of, you know, kind of those challenges. I think both have places. I just wish that our side, which I believe includes the natural birthing community, would be honored through that process, because I believe that society would heal. I believe our world would, I don't believe we would have near the conflict, and I don't think we would have near the division and the polarization if we actually brought that focus back to, which we've talked about this whole time, empowering birth, right? Empowering life as it's brought onto the planet.
Doctor of life, beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
I feel like I've been the only one talking.
and that's how I love my podcast, because you took us in the deep down roots of who you are. And thank you for that. Thank you for your authenticity and sharing with us this beautiful process you did all the way. Thank you.
I'm honored.
The episode is now finished. I really hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is here for you. Please contact me to give feedback, suggestions, and themes that you would like that we discuss. You can find out all the information from my guests and my contacts in the text underneath the episode. I believe that it is together that we go further. So please help me to connect with a maximum of pregnant couples to support them in their enlightened choices. Go on Apple Podcasts, find the podcast Authentic Birth, scroll down to the bottom of the page and find the section Ratings and Reviews. Click on the number of stars that you would like to give to support the podcast. 5 is the best to diffuse the message further. Looking forward to seeing you on the next episode. And in the meantime, look after yourself. Each birth is unique. May yours be truly authentic.